Be the right club. Be the right club today. Yes!
Johnny, that's better than most.
How about him?
That is better than most. Better than most!
Expect anything different?
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the No Laying Up Podcast. I am Chris Solomon, and joining me for the second time on the podcast, our friend from the Great White North, the biggest Ryder Cup fan I know, despite not having any allegiance to any teams participating in it, the biggest Mike Weir fan on the planet that I know, Mr. Adam Sarson. Adam, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you too, man. And I am probably the biggest Mike Weir fan that that you know, and there aren't very many of us left out there. So it's good to see him every April, even though it's usually one for two rounds.
What when is his? How long is he exempt through? Is it his exemption run out first, or does Kirk Ferentz's contract at Iowa run out first?
He actually, I believe he is on a special temporary exemption this year. He's got both a major and a minor medical. So I believe he's got like 8 or 10 events or something to make a certain amount of money. So the chances of that happening are probably slim and none, but you will see him at Augusta. So you're going to have to put up with that until he decides to pack it in.
I hate to laugh, but only Mike Weir could use 2 injury exemptions in the same year. I don't even know what those mean, but it seems like it was specifically invented for Mike Weir.
Yeah, it's not looking good.
Well, for those that haven't already turned it off, we do not plan to talk about Mike Weir for this entire session, but kind of wanted to do an off-season podcast. It's been forever since I've done one, and 2015, a lot happened. 2016 is going to be nuts. So, and Adam's been working a lot harder than I have in the past few months, and he's put together a list of 60 things that happened over the past year, I guess, in 2015. You can check that out at adamsarson.com, and I want to talk about a few of the things on that list, as well as talk about 2016 and what predictions Adam has, predictions I have, and talk about the crazy condensed schedule that we're going to have this next year. But first, we're going to start off with Adam's number one story, and I think, I don't remember if you put this disclaimer in, but when we talked about putting together your list, you're going to put the disclaimer in that the point of it wasn't to rank the stories in order of importance necessarily from 1 all the way to 60, but the number one item on your list is Tiger Woods' poor year in 2015. How did you get to that conclusion?
Well, to be perfectly honest, you're right, and there wasn't really a ranking system necessarily. You know, I did want to touch on, obviously, you know, look, we had a great year in 2015. You know, obviously with Jordan Spieth and Jason Day doing what they did. You know, Rory is, you know, he won 4 times, and people still probably think he had a bad year. So, I mean, you know that that's where we're kind of at. You know, Lydia Ko as well, like, no one's really talking about her. The majors were fantastic, probably the best year for majors that we had in my lifetime anyway. But to me, what was the biggest story for me was just truly how bad Tiger was. Now, granted, we can talk about how he was bad last year in 2014 as well, but it really got to seemingly a whole other level. I mean, he failed to break 80 3 times. You know, he shot an 85 at the Memorial. Like, he's won there, what, 8 times. You know, he got clowned on Twitter by the AARP. Like, this is not something that we were, like, we were expecting Jordan Spieth to be great. We were expecting Jason Day to be great. And maybe we weren't expecting Tiger to be great, but we certainly weren't expecting this either.
Yeah, I mean, you left out he lost a tooth at a ski tournament or a ski race of some kind, or he claimed he had a tooth knocked out and somehow didn't bleed as in the process of losing a tooth.
If it wasn't for Robert Allenby, that would be the weirdest story of the year without question. You can even argue that it's even more weird than Allenby, funny enough.
I think you can definitely make the case. Well, and also the fact that he dislocated a bone in his wrist at the Masters and put it back in place and then finished the last 9 holes. That was pretty impressive.
That's totally normal. Yeah. You can absolutely do that. Yeah. That's not an issue.
Yeah. Well, I disagreed in general with having Tiger being the number one story of the year, just with everything that happened, just because I'm not going to say written off Tiger, but like, I'm just kind of, until he shows me something, I'm kind of out on him. I mean, what I got really excited at the Wyndham when he made a run at it. It was in the final group on Sunday. It hit a triple on Sunday that kind of that broke his back, but no pun intended. But I don't know. He moves the needle for me, obviously, but I'm not depending on him from week to week. I don't think anyone really is. And it was our transition away from him in 2015, I thought, was the biggest story, and what Spieth did and what Day did trying to steal the year away from Spieth, and Spieth basically reclaiming it again with the Tour Championship. I mean, it was, man, it's going through your list, it's just so easy to forget all the things that happened. Like Rory tossing the club in the water, and obviously, like,
you're not wrong. 2015 was fantastic, but just one quick thing on Tiger, too. Like, there's only one person who can make the Wyndham an appointment viewing situation here, and that's him. Like, and the fact is that people found out who Tom Hoge was, apparently, by playing with him. Like, these are the things that happen when Tiger is playing well, and he did play well from, in very, very short instances. But, that's partially, to me, why it was so important. I mean, he's the reason why you might sign up for PGA Tour Live. He's the, it was still so shocking to me to see him, play the way he did. So...
Yeah, I have trouble separating him playing poorly from the injury. I don't think you can really separate the two at this point, but I don't know. I'd like to see him playing healthy, and if he really, I don't think he's really this terrible of a player now. If he's healthy and can get the reps, I think he's going to be fine. Obviously not to what he used to be, but I mean, it's easy to forget he was in the third to last group of the Masters. If it wasn't for what Spieth did at the Masters, he would have been pretty much in contention at Augusta come Sunday, which is pretty crazy to think of now after the summer he had after that moment. But with the injury now, I'm not expecting really much of anything for him for 2016. I'd be shocked if he played the Masters at this point. I don't know. Would you have a stance on that yet?
I honestly, based on the way he's been talking, I'd be shocked if we saw him at the Masters as well. I mean, I think what he's probably thinking in his head, I'm sure he's thinking, okay, you know what? I'll be able to start working out again sometime soon, and I'll be able to get back. But just the way you saw the dejected look on his face throughout the Hero World Challenge last month, like, he's not ready to do this. And, the fact that he's already been named the vice captain for the Ryder Cup, I think Rory kind of referenced this as well a few months ago when it happened, but to me that was almost like a raising of the white flag for him. It's like, I need to be involved somehow, so this is how I'm going to do it, because I'm clearly not going to be able to qualify on points. I'm not going to be able to play. So I'm not expecting anything from him in 2016.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that's definitely the safe projection. And I'm just mostly surprised, though, that you thought that was a bigger story this year than Paige Spiranek, though. I mean, that's what I thought the big main story, if you read headlines this time of year, that was the main takeaway from 2015.
The whole clickbait stuff, I mean, that's, it's what publishers have to do these days, I guess. But, I mean, the reaction to Paige Spiranek is probably the most ridiculous thing that happened, actually, right up there with Alan being Tiger's tooth.
I mean, it was like daily. It was like she posted a new Instagram picture. It's daily. Like, I just don't understand news or any I guess big publications thinking that unless you find something really funny, like in a post on social media or like some underlying joke there that needs explaining, why does that get turned into a blog post? Like, Jordan Spieth made a tweet to end 2015. Why does that get turned into an article? Like, who's not following Jordan Spieth on Twitter? Like, who needs that, like, that update on what Jordan Spieth is tweeting?
There was one a couple days ago about Natalie Galvis, talking about how, she not losing her bag at all in 2015 or whatever, and she was tempting fate or something. I was just like, what is this garbage? But it's what, unfortunately, it's what they have to do sometimes. It's not certainly what you or I do on our sites, but I mean, it's obviously a completely different scenario for them. They obviously have to do those sorts of things. So it is what it is, unfortunately. The reaction to Paige Spiranek, though, was absolutely insane. Like, I didn't understand. Like, people were crucifying her for absolutely no reason. I mean,
to back up, you're talking about her getting a sponsor's exemption into the Ladies European Tour event, correct?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if I'm a struggling tour pro, I don't care what the reason is. I'm absolutely taking an invite. It just doesn't matter.
No, yeah. No, I mean, I get on Mike Weir for taking invites that he probably shouldn't be accepting and blocking out other people. No. I think, yeah, it's very misguided, the anger, I guess, or the frustration towards her getting an invite. But it's just kind of like, it's a slippery slope. It's like, are we really going to start, and I have any influence on who gets into ladies' European tour events, but like, is that really what's going to become like a qualifying factor? Is like, I understand there's some factor in a sponsor's exemption, like a Q rating of some kind. And I just don't want it to end up being like this horny men's show, like the ladies' tour. You know what I mean? Like, it should be about the golf. It should always be about the golf. It's not about who has the most Instagram followers and who is, you know, posting scandalous pictures to their Instagram. That shouldn't be a path to getting into tour events, that's for sure.
Well, no, absolutely. But in that instance, yeah, sure, call it the tours and call it the publishers. But calling her out seems a little misguided. So,
yeah, I can see that. No, I think that's fair. But other than that, you know, Dash Day not making the top 10 as well was I had a concern with that.
He was everywhere. He was absolutely everywhere. It seemed like any time Jason Day was on TV, Dash was right beside him. But he was one of the bigger stories of the year, funny enough. But he could not crack the top 10. Unfortunately, the year was just too good for him to crack the top 10.
And things that I love about this list too is just like thing. I literally forgot about the Keegan and Miguel incident. Like, that happened back in March. I missed it when it happened, but like, that didn't even crack your top 50 of things that happened this year. They almost got in a fight on the course.
Well, I'll be perfectly honest. I actually scrolled through every single post that Kyle Porter made on CBS.
Oh God, that must have taken hours.
I took some time to actually do that, and basically I combined that with some other news that I picked up elsewhere, and then kind of put them together in a list. But that was one of the most ridiculous things too. It is like, I mean, I'll be honest. I mean, you can't tell me that you wouldn't want to fight Keegan Bradley at some point.
But, I mean, he's very punchable. Punchable.
He's a very, very punchable face. I love that whole thing just because Miguel didn't trust him to take a routine drop.
Yep.
And I understand it's match play, but, like, come on. It's a routine drop, and you don't trust him to do it, but him and Pepsi getting involved, it was pretty funny.
Yeah, I think I made the point. Shane Ryan and I talked about that on his podcast when it happened. Just made the point that, like, that's like a typical play in the NFL. Like, there's a little bit of shoving and a little incident, like, and then they go and play the next play. But when this happens in golf, it's like the top story on every website and everything I was discussing at the time. I agree, it was a top story. It was hilarious, but it's just so funny the way like a fight in golf just will absolutely never happen on the course, or not with the cameras on you, at least. I'm sure there's been incidents, but I struggle to think of a really good incident with the camera on you, other than like Bubba yelling at Steve Elkington, maybe.
that was probably 7 or 8 years ago now.
Yeah.
Or Bubba just yelling at anyone in general.
Yeah, rules officials or ants that are burrowing, or of course Teddy, God rest his soul, probably didn't make it through Christmas. Bryson DeChambeau made an appearance or won the NCAA title this year. What do you I was curious was what your thoughts are and what you expect from him in the coming year.
I honestly don't really know what to expect from him, to be perfectly honest. I mean, he's such an interesting guy. You know, he plays, everyone knows the story by now, I suppose, but the idea that he plays all of his irons are the exact same length, which to me is just incredibly bizarre. You probably know more about that sort of thing than I do, but it doesn't make a whole ton of sense to me. He's a really, really obviously smart guy who knows what works for him, I guess. I mean, he's very interesting. I don't think he actually has status anywhere right now. I could be completely off on that, but I don't think he has status, so it's kind of hard to know what to expect. But if he gets into events, I mean, he played really well in Australia just a couple of weeks ago. He's going to be able to, you know, it's not going to be like Jordan Spieth, I don't think, with him getting into the John Deere and just, you know, winning it and all of a sudden becoming Jordan Spieth. But he's definitely somebody that we're going to have to keep a very close eye on in 2016.
Yeah, I mean, I wrote about this a couple weeks ago in Mailbag, and I'm not the first to come up with this. I think Big Randy from one of my No Laying Up brethren was first to really point out and make the point, like, Yeah, he's like an interesting guy, but not really like in the most charming way. It seems a little more like, look at me, look how interesting I am, rather than being really genuine. You agree?
Yeah, I don't, like, to me, interesting guy is like, you know, like Henrik Stenson is an interesting guy just because of everything he's been through and all that sort of thing. I don't know if I get that exact same vibe from DeChambeau. That's definitely the case.
Yeah, and going back to what you were saying about his, he's got an unorthodox swing, and you know, he plays all of his clubs are the same length. All of his irons, I think, just are the same length. Which, I mean, I'm 50-50 on it because I'm a believer in going with what got you there. But I'm also a believer, more so in other sports other than golf, in just understanding that success at one level does not necessarily project to success at the next level. I don't know enough. I've not watched him play enough golf. I don't know enough about him or about his game, his swing, his spin rate, ball flight, all that stuff. I don't track that stuff nearly as much as maybe I should. But I don't know of anything specifically that won't project well. But I think it's a fair question to ask: is, you know, can you maintain, you know, this unorthodox swing? Obviously, we've seen unorthodox swings work. Think of, I don't know, Jim Furyk, Lee Trevino, or two people that come to the top of your head. But like, those are the outliers. Those are the exceptions to the rule. And, you know, does this playing style, having all your irons be the same length, I don't know how it affects you, but I think it's fair to question whether or not that type of approach can succeed in PGA Tour.
No, I completely agree. I'm sure it's been done before. Like, I don't recall it offhand. It's like, you know, certain players, you know, they don't use an interlocking grip. You know, Paul Azener never did. Scott Piercy, I know, doesn't use one now. I actually don't either, but like it's weird. Like, you don't usually see this much deviation in something that is so standard. So I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see what he does. I mean, he rocks that cap pretty nice though. So I mean, I'll give him that.
That goes also in that category though. Of look how interesting I am. See, I'm so different. I wear this hat and whatnot, but no, I'm rooting for him. I think he'd be an interesting character to add to the mix. I don't know a ton about him other than reading a couple articles on him. I know, I think Ryan Labner had a really good one on Golf Channel. I read that, and I'm definitely interested to see, you know, I mean, you know me, I'm always looking for the next young and upcoming players, but Ollie Schneider-Jones is probably the guy that I'm targeting, I think, the most for this next year. I think he's only got 3 or 4 sponsors exemption starts left to earn quite a decent amount of FedEx Cup points. So I'm a little pessimistic on his chances of earning a card this coming year. And I don't think, did he end up getting web.com status? I don't even remember.
I thought he did get web.com status. I know he's playing at Torrey in February. They've already announced that.
Oh, okay.
So I mean, that's something to look out for. Yeah, and he's a great player too. And I mean, you know, he's really fun to watch for sure. You know, it's what we've always talked about too. It's like the more characters that this game has, the better. I mean, it's not like, you know, team sports where there's so much to talk about. And you know, the more people that we get out there, like, you know, like Bryson DeChambeau. I mean, he might not be, maybe he's not genuine, I don't know, but I mean, he's at least someone to talk about. It's a lot like the whole Patrick Reed thing, and I know that you're a big Patrick Reed guy, so it works for me.
I'm mostly a Patrick Reed guy for that exact reason, though. Like, I beat the jokes to death. I'm well aware of that, but it's not going to stop, okay? He's got several mixtapes that are going to drop in 2016, actually, so just be prepared for those. The Masters one's going to be absolute fire. One guy that, you know, had like a huge 2015 that I almost think for once kind of slid under the radar was Ricky Fowler.
Yeah, I mean, everyone talked about him in 2014 because he finished in the top five in all four majors. But, I mean, he won 3 massive tournaments. You know, he didn't win a major, so, I mean, obviously there's still going to be people who are going to, you know, stand by that whole thing. But, I mean, winning the Players literally the week of the overrated poll that had him and Poulter tied at the top was amazing. And the way he handled it in the press conference afterward was amazing as well. Then he goes out and wins the Scottish Open, which was probably the best field of the year on the European Tour, which I know you'd argue doesn't really say much, but that's just the way it is over there. And then he wins the Deutsche Bank as well. I mean, he had a fantastic season.
Yeah, it'd be interesting. I'm sure somebody's asking the question. I haven't heard the answer as to which season he'd rather take, this season or last season with that awesome major run. I think the answer would be this year with the three wins. But just the way that he did it at the Players' Championship, too, was unbelievably impressive. That pin that he kept firing at number 17, I think it was Maltby, like, thought he was wet on the final one and ended up being stuck to 6 feet. I mean, that just showed how big his stones are. And he fears no situation. And I feel like you can tell a difference in some guys the way they play under pressure. And Fowler's not one of them. I think he almost gets more aggressive and even more cool under the pressure. And I think it's time. And I don't have him predicted to win a major in 2016, but it would absolutely not surprise me. I mean, that's very, very hot take. I think he's a top six player in the world or whatever. But the next step is to win a major, and that could be easily coming in the near future.
Yeah, no, he's got the game. I mean, he can, and you know what the funny thing is, too, is now he's gotten longer off the tee. He's probably not the most consistent player out there. I mean, he still has those issues with, with the big number that he needs to kind of get rid of, but no, he's right there. He's going to be a massive part of the Ryder Cup team in 2016. He's going to be in contention, you know, way more than he has recently, so I'm really, really looking forward to seeing him over the next 12 months.
Yeah. I forget what I was going to say about Fowler. What I was going to say is it was crazy to me. I'm talking about, just thinking about, like, social media and influence and what we were talking about, guys that move the needle. I feel like that Sunday of the Players was, like, the most active social media day of the golf season, almost. Maybe definitely outside of the majors, and, you know, people argue the Players should be the fifth major or whatever, but I just remember I think I was in Germany or something, trying to watch it on my iPad and, like, tweeting it, and, like, everyone was all over this thing. This was the probably had to be the most watched golf event of the year outside of the majors.
Well, it's funny because I ended up missing a vast majority of that tournament, and I ended up coming home. Just as regulation was ending, so we're just getting ready for the playoff, and I was pissed that I missed so much of it. But his run, I mean, what he birdied, I think he was 6 under through his last six to get him. He was 4 shots back of Chris Kirk at the turn, I think.
Oh.
Like, it's insane to think about the run that he went on. And I don't think, because it's not a major, I think people tend to overlook pretty much every other tournament that the tour goes to. But it's something that we probably don't talk about enough, is the way he actually came through and won that tournament. And it just made it so much better that, you know, him and Poulter were named as the overrated players that week. And then he just went out and won the biggest tournament that they have. It was so good.
I'm fine with Poulter staying on that list. But I'm happy. Also happy with Ricky. With Ricky disproving that part. But I don't really know how to make this point or how to make this make sense. But, you know, I've been watching a few in my lazy holiday days here, watching a few, like, replays of events, just even from 2015. And I did watch some kind of recap on the Players' Championship this year. It's easy to, like, you kind of need those shows or those highlights to look back and really truly remember how things played out, because it's easy to look back and be like, oh, Ricky won the Players. But, like, if one shot goes differently in the playoff and he gets second, like, we wouldn't be sitting here having this conversation. So it's easy to just, like, look at the result and, like, remember the final way of how it got there, that final shot. But, like you said, being 4 back of Chris Kirk at the turn, like, gets completely lost in your memory. Like, you don't remember necessarily the process of how everything played out to get there. And that struck me even more when I actually watched it with my grandpa when we were in North Carolina over Christmas, is the replay of the 2015 U.S. Open, and seeing all the things that happened on the back nine of that U.S. Open. Like, it's easy to remember DJ missed the putt and Spieth ended up winning it, but that was like probably the best finish we've had all year on tour.
Brandon Grace almost hit a train. Like, I don't understand.
Ejected.
Shot 77 in the opening round and missed the playoff by a shot.
He shot 29 on the back nine.
How does that even, that doesn't even make any sense at all. That he, like, he must, I don't even know how he handled that afterwards. Because, I mean, you know, he, 77 and he finishes 1 shot out. Like, that's absolutely crazy. Jason Day collapsed because he had vertigo and he still finished in the top 10. Rory, like, barely played well at all the entire week, still finished in the top 10. Like, that was insane. I mean, people are going to, obviously, it's, you know, Spieth's big coming out party was probably that tournament. outside of obviously, you know, breaking the tying the scoring record at the Masters. But DJ three putting the 72nd hole from like what 12 feet, like it's I cannot believe that happened. Yeah, it was that and the Players is there were definitely the two best tournaments of the year in my book, and then probably the Masters is probably right behind it.
Yeah, it was just all so weird how it played out. Everything about Chambers Bay was weird. The greens were weird. Fox's coverage too was just at best weird. Like, I mean, they did a decent job down the stretch of, like, you know, they didn't go to any commercials down the stretch and just showed the action, but it just obviously didn't have a great flow to it and whatnot. And
they ran a promo narrated by the Chambers Bay tree.
Yeah, that's a thing that happened.
That didn't go very well.
Yeah, but you can easily see how that would get approved in a production meeting, right? I mean, that sounds like such a great idea.
Well, I mean, the Ferentz Cup rap got approved by NBC as well, so I mean, you know, trying to... No network is absolved from any of that stuff. Their pro tracer was incredible, though.
It was.
I'll give them that.
It was, and I loved the microphones in the holes. I think that was an awesome... That moment that Spieth gave us on 16 with that birdie, ball dropping in the cup, and the microphone being right there for it, I thought... That's the moment that sticks out for me the most of that whole week, other than the marshal trying to stop the train going by on 16.
That might have been the best vine of the year outside. Well, with the exception, I guess, Phil sliding down that hill with some straights. But that's the vine of the year. That marshal trying to stop the train with his hands. There was other marshals trying to stop the bushes, I think, from swaying about. Like it was a great week.
I think Fox, I have higher hopes for them in the coming year. I think everyone does, hopefully. I mean, it can't be worse than it was last year. Hopefully they're just going to, I think they need to give Holly Saunders a much more expanded role. I don't think her role should be to ask stupid questions at the end of a player's round. I don't think they should be asking Kevin Kistner about how Jordan Spieth is doing out there. Like, that was just so terrible. Like, she could be in a booth. I'd like to hear color commentary from her. I think she carries herself really well on live TV. She's just not a great interviewer.
The big problem that they're going to run into, though, is, and it's actually something that Joe Buck referenced a few weeks ago, is that they're only doing USGA events. So for them, you know, it's impossible to get into a group and trying to figure all this stuff out. Like, you look at what Joe Buck does week to week with the NFL. I mean, he does a game every single week. He does games every single week for baseball as well. So he just kind of walks right in. It's actually pretty amazing that they weren't, then it was even further off the rails than they did. And then, like I said, though, the issue is that you're only doing three or four events a year. You know, you're not going to be able to get into a group. And they work better as the week went on. But it's going to be tough. I mean, and now they're going to Oakmont this year, and I mean, Oakmont's should be a little easier. There's a lot of history that you can kind of play off of there. But it's not going to be easy for them to pick it right up, though.
Yeah, I'll give them that. And I think we were expecting some growing pains. And get Kurt Menefee off my screen. I don't want to see that. I don't want to see him coming on after Spieth just won his second major in a row saying that Spieth doesn't do anything great. Just get that entirely off my screen.
Kurt Menefee is a very good broadcaster, but he was just horribly out of his element.
Oh, It's not fair.
That's on Fox.
Yeah.
He should not have been doing that. Greg Norman was hit and miss. Like, you know, they went to too many, you know, four-man booths instead of just describing, you know, trying to describe what was going on instead of just showing what was going on. That was their biggest problem the entire week. So.
Yeah, I liked Norman. I didn't think Buck was terrible. And he, like you said, just a lack of experience. And my favorite moment, though, was when Adam Spieth, like, tapped in for, Adam Scott tapped in for 64 on Sunday. And, like, he made the putt, and Buck didn't know what he shot. And, like, it comes on the screen, and he's like, and Adam Scott finishes with 64? It's like, wait a second, you're calling this event. Like, how is this a surprise? It's like they had no clue what was going on. I mean, I have no idea how that's a surprise, but I was dying. I was like, that sums this week up in entirety.
The great screen grab of Phil giving Holly Saunders a hug after their interview that floated around Twitter for about 2 weeks.
Phil does this stuff on purpose, right?
Oh yeah, Phil does. Well, look, Phil is too smart and too calculated. Everything he does with a purpose. There's no getting around that.
Every time he's going to come up on this podcast, it's going to be something completely not golf related. We're talking about him sliding down a hill so far, him hugging Holly Saunders, probably his belly rubs or whatever at the President's Cup will come up. Anything that has that does not have to do with his play will be a subject of conversation.
He played the wrong ball
at the
President's Cup because he thought that a different ball was going to give him an advantage on a par 5.
The most Phil thing ever.
I don't understand why you have two different balls in your bag anyway, but you know, that's Phil. Right? There's nothing else you can really say about him.
He was probably like telling a marshal about it too before he put it in play. Listen, I'm going to put this in play because it's going to give me an extra 3 yards, and has to tell everyone around him exactly how smart he is.
Sir, you're next on the tee. Please go ahead. Please. He's the best. There's nothing more you can really say about him.
No.
The great vine that I think Brendan Porath posted as well about how they spotted their best team an extra hole and they still didn't beat them. It's like he's not doing it in any kind of malicious way. It's just the way he is, and it's amazing.
I mean, God bless him for trying to drum up some interest in the President's Cup. I couldn't bring myself to watch it after the Koepka snub. People thought I was joking that I wasn't going to watch it if he wasn't called up, and he wasn't.
It was one of the best tournaments of the year.
I don't want to hear it.
It was a lot of fun. It was a ton of fun, and it's actually relevant again, which is, believe me, it's as shocking to me as it is to anyone else. But, you know, it was one of the best tournaments of the year, without question. And if the Ryder Cup gets anywhere near that kind of intense, we're going to be in for one hell of a tournament.
I'm very excited for the Ryder Cup in 2016. I'm not going to lie. We'll get to that in a little bit. First, I want to go very quickly past the Open Championship in 2015 in that horror show. Only to mention, somebody the other day tried to convince me that Mark Leishman was in the playoff for the Open Championship this year, but I've been there in person to believe that. I don't remember that at all. That's not a thing that happened in 2015. Please tell me that.
Oh, man. No, it happened. It absolutely happened. Jason Day just missed out on that playoff. So did Spieth. Like the fact that Spieth was this close to the Grand Slam is absolutely insane.
He really was so close.
He wins the first two, misses out on by a shot at the playoff, and then the only reason why he doesn't win the PGA is just Jason Day just goes off at 20 under par. Like,
out of body.
It's just insane.
Yep. Louis Oosthuizen, I think I've made this point before. I think he's like four or five shots away from being a four-time major winner and having three out of the four legs of the Grand Slam.
I still can't get over that 77. But yeah, no, he's really good. He just needs to stay healthy. And it just goes to show you the whole idea about, you know, about how, you know, certain guys can't close and this and that. And it's like, you know what, sometimes someone just beats you because they just had a slightly better day. And Louis Oosthuizen is probably the best example of that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not an indication. Like, all his close calls, I don't think, are really an indication of him. And we've seen him run away with a British Open at that exact course before. And I thought he was going to – I was definitely rooting for him once it went to the playoff. Anybody but ZJ would have been fine, but Oosty would have been
– What's your problem with Zach Johnson? I understand he doesn't exactly embody the whole no laying up mentality, but, I mean, he's really just doing what he's got available in the bag. Like, he's not going to be able to hit greens in two. He's not going to be able to be super aggressive. He's just
– I know.
I get your other problems, but like it's just a little off.
I've got a lot of problems.
Oh, you do.
I do get this question a decent amount. I mean, he's basically the face for laying up, right? I mean, he won the Masters by laying up, and I just like his playing style is just completely the opposite of what I believe in. I get that he plays within his own bag, plays within himself, and that's the only way he knows how to play. I get that, but I'm not a fan of him. I'm not a fan of his game and that way of playing it. And then, I mean, it was kind of a non-issue until he blocked me on Twitter for absolutely no reason. I never even mentioned him, never said a word to him, and found out that he blocked me on Twitter. And that's just
the word gets out, man. I mean, look, I've been blocked by Webb Simpson and Sergio Garcia for reasons that I couldn't tell you either. So me of all people getting blocked by Sergio is basically a crime. Like, I don't understand, but I get the logic, but you know, Zach Johnson laying up at the Masters, I mean, he's not long enough to reach those holes anyway. Like, he might as well lay up.
I know, but he's just like the face of laying up. Like that's part of my shtick. Okay, you gotta just let me have this one. I'm just not. He's just. I hear that he's a good guy. I've heard from I think DJ Pajowski is one of the leaders of don't listen to Solomon on Zach Johnson. He's a great guy. He's awesome. I'm sure he is.
Very topic about you about this one.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't get it. That's fine.
He's definitely not in the Bubba Poulter douchiness category. Like, he's a completely different category. Personality-wise, I've got no problem. Other than he ate corn out of the claret jug. It's like, that's the kind of stuff I'm talking about. Like, that's laying up. Like, come on, you can't eat corn out of the claret jug.
You don't know what else he did with it.
It was the lamest year in the claret jug history, I can promise you that.
That's probably true.
And he ruined Spieth's grand slam. I know Spieth wouldn't have, two other guys would have beaten Spieth, but to have him be the guy to break Spieth's run, like, it just hurt. It just hurt more than I was prepared for. So, but it goes to good show. Like, the last, I swear, four or something of the last tournaments I've been to in person, the winners have been ZJ, Matt Kuchar, Bubba, and I guess Matsuyama won the Memorial the last time I was there, but it was almost Kevin Na. Like, I've had really bad runs of in-person tournaments as well. It makes me extra bitter. Like, my first Open Championship at the Old Course, and ZJ wins it. Come on. Come on.
ZJ wins it after about 1,000 different delays. You weren't even there for the playoff on Monday, were you?
No, I was flying back. I went to there that morning, Monday morning, went out there and watched Horschel a little bit. And then I had to catch a flight. I had a 4:20 flight out of Edinburgh on Monday afternoon. I thought there was no possible way I would miss the end of this tournament. I wanted to be on the 18th green when they gave the trophy away at the Open Championship. I think that was part of the deal with flying out Monday. And of course, I'm in the air while Spieth is making his run on the back nine on Monday. Like, what are the chances of that? There's no Wi-Fi on flights in Europe. I got nothing. I had absolutely nothing. And I'm watching it on the train on the way home, and he makes the putt on 16, and I get up out of my seat and scream. People probably thought I was attacking the train. I mean, I was so pumped. It was awesome. And got home in time. I got home literally as he was approaching 18 and spun that wedge off the green. And then I honestly don't even remember watching the playoff. I don't.
Yeah, I mean, I was unfortunately stuck at work. I mean, I ended up catching the vast majority of it while I was sitting there at work. But yeah, no, it definitely wasn't the same. I mean, so you got to see Tiger laying up on all the par fours, and then you didn't get to see the most exciting part of the day. So yeah. that must have sucked.
Yep. No, I said we would go very quickly past the Open Championship, and we spent way more time on that than I wanted to. So let's go. Slide by, finishing with the PGA Championship. I said it to Porter, I think, after we debriefed on the PGA, that I thought it was the best major performance of the year, what Jason did there, and one of the best major performances I've seen in my lifetime.
Yeah, I mean, it's impossible to put into words, almost, to be honest. I mean, he was, from the first hole on Thursday, he was super aggressive all week. I've talked about this 1,000 times already, but on 16 on Sunday, Jason Day is battling with Spieth, and he sees Spieth go into the bunker, the greenside bunker on the left side on the 16th, and he has all this room on the right side to hit the green, and there's no reason for him to be super aggressive in any way at all. But instead, he just goes right at the flag anyway, even though he has, I believe, a two-shot lead at this point. And he lands it on the fringe and it stays there. But that just shows you the mentality that he had the entire week. It was like there was nothing. He was never going to stop being aggressive, and that's what led him to his win. I mean, he won what, four or five times in the year too. Like it was the crowning achievement for him. And then he didn't play very well at the President's Cup, but I'm sure that didn't really even enter his mind after winning five times and getting the first major.
That's it's a home game for him too, right? In Korea, right? I mean, he's the home team. No, I'm a big Jason Day fan. Obviously, I was rooting for Spieth, so I think I'd love to see a lot more scenarios like that where, you know, the guy where I'm rooting for two good guys. I feel like I'm always rooting against Bubba or Poulter. It always comes down to those two. Or I feel like that's the case. I'm always rooting against one of those two or ZJ at the end of a tournament. So it's nice to have two guys going head to head where I really don't care who wins. I wanted Spieth to win three majors in a year, but I mean, you can't do much better.
Well, here he and Koepka were at the top too.
That's true. There was some evil to root for there. Andrew Bunn, the hero, was right there. But yeah, Koepka. Was Koepka near the top? I mean, I saw him on the leaderboard, but I don't know. I didn't see a single shot that he played, so I can't confirm that.
They showed him once on Sunday, I think, once or twice, after he made like an eagle, a ridiculous eagle on like a 640-yard par 5. And yeah, no, CBS could not have dropped the ball any harder with that one.
I love how Jaime Diaz, like, I must really, how much do I have to beat a topic to death to get a mention from Jaime Diaz in Golf Digest? But Jaime Diaz even mentioned how often I whine about Koepka getting lack of TV coverage in an article in actual Golf Digest. So I don't know if that's a significant accomplishment or like that is a embarrassing thing that happened to me in 2015. But
probably a little bit of both.
Yep, I'm fine with that.
You know, you get called out on Twitter seemingly on a daily basis by people who think you beat the Koepka drum a little too hard. So
yeah,
I believe Graham DeLette did it to you, if I recall.
Yeah, he just owned me and said I was being a child about it, and then unfollowed me. So that one stung a little bit, but. Welcome to the list, Graham DeLette. You're starting a fight with a guy you don't want to start a fight with, I don't think. I'm not threatening you. I'm not Stephen A. Smith, okay? I'm not threatening you.
You gotta watch out for these Canadians, man. They get aggressive.
Yeah, you guys are supposed to be nice. What the hell was that, Graham?
Listen, you making jokes about us celebrating New Year's early. You're making all kinds of things. So, I mean, you're lucky it's not worse than you already.
What was the thing you told me, I think, about how people love Canadians abroad? Do you remember what you told me?
I'm not 100% sure on that. I know I told you that Americans know most about their own country, but they don't know much else about anyone else.
That's fair. That's very fair. But you said something like, yeah, people abroad, they love Canadians. And I was like, why is that?
He's
like,
true. I did say that, actually, now that I think about it.
You said, but I was like, why is that? And you're like, well, they love us when they find out we're not you.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
that's really fair.
Exactly it.
I've heard that it's like people that do this in Europe. I'm not one of them, but they will actually, people ask where they're from, they'll say Canada just to avoid telling people they're from the U.S.
Which is shameful. You moved all the way to Europe from the U.S. and that must have played some kind of part in it.
It's my responsibility, or I'm taking it upon myself to change the appearance of Americans all across Europe. It's going to take a while, thanks to what Patrick Reed did when he came over here in 2014. But no, I've been pleasantly surprised. I was of the impression that people didn't like Americans here, but when I mentioned that, people are like, why do you say that? Like, they seem very, very confused as to that statement. They definitely don't tend to agree with our foreign policy and our politics in general. But as far as they're like, the travelers we meet, the people we meet tend to be some of the nicest and best people that come around. So it's not all bad for Americans over here.
Just be nice and you don't have to worry about it.
Exactly.
It doesn't matter where you're from.
They also like, because we tip 20%, and that's supposedly a weird thing on this part of the world.
Yeah, over in Europe, they don't do that at all.
Yeah.
So yeah, you and I are definitely further ahead on that scale for sure.
Is that a Canada thing too? You tip 20%?
We tip typically, I would say between 15 and 20. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, I guess we're just nice people.
Yeah.
All right. I'm ready to talk about 2016 this year. I've made my four major winner predictions. I want to hear your four predictions for this year, and I'm not going to let you pick Tiger again for the Masters this year. Please don't do it.
For the record, that was not that bad of a pick. He actually played well. I mean, he was in one of the final, four or five groups on Sunday before he had to pop a bone back into his wrist.
Yep.
I don't know. For the Masters, I'm going to go with Bubba. I know you're probably going to hate me for that, but I just...
The call has been disconnected.
Yeah, exactly. Look, he's, for whatever reason, he plays well seemingly at two or three courses every year, and this is one of them. I just don't see how he doesn't finish at least in the top five or top ten every year at this place, because he seems to love it so much. I've got Bubba winning the Masters again, as much as it pains both me and you probably hear it.
What did he do last year? I don't even remember. I don't remember him being a factor other than he put the green jacket on Spieth, which I took way too much joy out of. But I don't even remember what he finished last year.
He, just looking it up now, he did finish T-38. So I mean, he does have these little stretches. But I mean, he finished T-50 in 2013 as well. So I mean, who knows? Yeah. Maybe he's been there going this, good tournament, bad tournament, thin form. But I'm just going to take Bubba. It seems like that's probably the most safe play at this point, to be honest. he's drafted a game before. He's about the line. Obviously, he's won there twice. So I'm going to go with Bubba.
All right. That's fair. I'm looking at Bubba's run in the majors last year. T38 in the Masters, 85th missed cut at the U.S. Open, tied for 107th and missed cut at the Open Championship, tied for 21st at the PGA. But my God, pray for Ted Scott.
It just means that he's due. Although I will say this, Kira Dakapi Bardenrat is playing there for the first time this year, and I cannot possibly be more excited. So hopefully he can challenge Bubba for the win.
I would be in full support of that if he dethrones Bubba. I'm fine with that. All right, U.S. Open at Oakmont.
U.S. Open. I mean, Oakmont is just renowned for what their ridiculous greens, right? I mean, right. there's no getting around that. It's what they're known for. So I mean, it's tough to take anyone who is a bad putter at any major, obviously. But when it comes to a U.S. Open, you want obviously someone who's going to keep it in the middle. You want someone who's a great putter. I'm going to go with Jordan Spieth. It just seems to make the most sense. I don't see how anyone wins at Oakmont without being on fire on the greens, and he's the most likely candidate.
Okay, I can buy that. British Open at Troon. Right? Is that Troon, right?
Yeah, it's at Troon. We're actually between, was it Troon, Baltusrol, and Oakmont.
Yep.
You're not going to find too many years where you have yet better major venues than that.
Yeah.
I'm probably going to get absolutely crushed by this, but I'm taking Sergio.
Yeah, do it. Do it. Stand by it.
I will take Sergio in pretty much any major that I... He's going to win one. He's too good not to win one. I don't really have much of an explanation as to why I would think that he's going to do well. He was cut there in 2004 when he last held it. So, I mean, there isn't really a run of good form to go on. But he's got the game to do it. He's one of the best ball strikers in the world. This is the tournament. This is the major that if he is going to win one, it's the most likely one that he's going to win.
Yep.
So I'm going to go with Sergio.
All right. I've supported. I'm with you. All right. PGA Championship. It's a mere 2 weeks after the end of the Open Championship this year, thanks to the Olympics. It goes British Open, Canadian Open, PGA Championship. Canada just gets royally boned over in this one.
We're getting completely screwed over. There is no way that anyone, like, you're going to get, like, the Canadian players, and then I guess, RBC is the sponsor, so any of the RBC guys, you might get a handful of them. I'm sure they're going to push for guys like Jason Day to show up, but, God, yeah, it's not going to be a very good tournament. They're off to Baltusrol. I think they last held in 05.
Yep, Phil.
Phil ended up winning that year. He's not going to win. He's probably not going to win anything. But I will go slightly off the board, I guess, and go with Louis Oosthuizen.
Okay.
I don't have much of a logical reason behind that. I don't think he even played there in 05. He's too good. He's too good. He's got to win one of these things. I will say, though, I think we've talked about this before, too. It's been a long time since we've had one of those, like, completely, like, off-the-board Darren Clark, Rich Beam major winners, and that's got to happen at some point soon. I don't know who it'll be, but, like, all of a sudden you're going to see, like, Soren Kjeldsen is going to win a major, and it's just going to be completely off the board.
Well, the good thing about these predictions is no one's going to ever look back at them unless they're really right, right? So you can pretty much predict whatever you want here. No one's going back to this.
I've been called an idiot several times over the past, 7 or 8 months because of my Tiger prediction. So I'm not exactly looking forward to those. I'm all four of my dads missed the cut.
I pretty much get it on a per tweet basis, so I don't feel that bad for you. But
yeah.
All right. So you're saying no Rory, no Jason Day majors in 2016.
That's what I'm going with.
All right. My picks, I made them, I think, in the December mailbag. I said Spieth at the Masters, DJ at the U.S. Open. I hadn't really thought of the greens angle that you mentioned, so I'm a little hesitant on that. But I'm also a believer of the theory in general that DJ, his presumed lack of knowledge or his I'd call it willful ignorance, if you will, works in his benefit for his golf game in that he doesn't appear or seem to have the mental capability of getting in his own head, and he kind of is able to block out some of these things. Like, the greens may very well be getting in the heads of a lot of players where DJ just doesn't even think about it and balls out. He usually plays pretty well at Augusta, but is never really threatened there, if I remember right. So that theory kind of holds a little water, but I just think he's due to win one. I'm not betting against him to win one in 2016, so I'm taking him to win the U.S. Open. The Open Championship, Rory's return to glory there. And then at the PGA, it's going to be the man, the myth, the legend, the moment we've all been waiting for, Mr. Brooks Koepka.
Yeah, there's no bias there whatsoever. you're completely right, though, about DJ. I wouldn't be – you can never be surprised when he wins a tournament, obviously. Rory, the whole thing about Rory and Jason Day, I mean, I just – you know, predicting golf tournaments at this point of the year is usually just – predicting golf tournaments at any point of the year is usually just a waste of time. But, Rory obviously is, to me, he's actually probably the most talented player in the world. I don't think there's any, I don't know, maybe there is a debate about that. But, I'm very, very much looking forward to seeing what he can do this year. And the same thing with your boy Brooks. Hopefully if he actually, he already won a tournament this year and he still didn't get any love. So, maybe if he actually goes out and wins a major, then people will actually be forced to pay attention to him.
Well, that was also barely on TV when he actually won it. They didn't show him live until the 15th hole or 16th hole, but not that I'm bitter or anything or counting or anything. But
people had already paid attention to the Super Bowl anyway. That's honestly all it was.
I'm also a little concerned about the rumored equipment change. It's not been announced yet. I would be very surprised if it's not announced on Monday, which is tomorrow. We're recording this on Sunday the 3rd, that he is moving to Nike. I wouldn't be nervous about equipment changes unless it's the move to Nike, which just seems to take a little longer for adjustment for most guys. Rest in peace, Kyle Stanley. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, look, Nip Watney has never recovered, to be perfectly honest. So, Thorbjørn Olesen finally started to play well last year, I think about a year and a half after he switched. So, these switches take time for regardless of what the player is. I mean, Rory took a little while. Tiger, yep. I believe, took a little while as well back in the late 90s after moving from Titleist. So, yep. I mean, they're always going to take time. I mean, as you always say, though, the cream rises, right? So, I mean, if Brooks is as good as everyone seems to think he is, it shouldn't take him, hopefully, much longer than that.
Yeah, no, I mean, correlation doesn't necessarily equal causation. It's not like it's a guaranteed struggle, but I'm that's the only thing that has me apprehensive at all for his 2016, but I'm still sticking by him. But we've actually gone this long, too, and have we even mentioned Justin Thomas by name? I feel if he wins a major without me predicting it, I'm going to feel like I've betrayed him at this point.
Well, I mean, you can take Spieth out of the Masters if you really want to, but that doesn't seem like the appropriate call. So, I love watching Justin Thomas. I mean, he's got probably the fastest swing that I've ever seen. So, he's going to be right there. And you know what? He's hopefully going to be on the Ryder Cup team as well.
Yeah, and that's what I wanted. The last thing I want to talk to you about, because I think the Olympic conversation is going to be very short, but
Did you want to touch on the Olympics then? Because I've got very little to say about it. But
other than I'm just going to ask if I'm supposed to be excited about this, because I'm not. I think they missed a huge opportunity to make this a match play event by making it stroke play. It doesn't seem any different to me than a regular PGA Tour tournament, other than it's worse in that you're limited to four people per country. If I'm understanding the rules right, is that how you understand it?
I believe the rules are that you can have four per country if they're ranked in the top 15 in the world. So right now, I believe the U.S. are the only country that would have four going. And then after that, it's only two per team. You're right. I mean, Shane Ryan and I did a thing. I helped Shane Ryan out with the Denver Golf Digest a while ago now about actually making them into separate groups and making a match play. But they obviously, they want to go about it with stroke play. And I just don't think anyone's going to pay any attention to it. I mean, you've got guys like Adam Scott who are basically saying, nah, actually, I really don't care. So, I mean, it's not a big deal for them. Like, guys like Jordan Spieth, I mean, he's always going to say the right things. He's going to want to go over, but I can't imagine that they're overly excited compared to what they usually do on the PGA Tour.
Yeah, the only reason I'm interested is, like, it would be badass to win a gold medal. I don't care what the sport is. Like, the first time golf coming back since, whatever, 1904, like, that's what you're playing for. You're playing for your country and for a gold medal. Like, that's the only thing that interests me, you know what I mean? Like, it sounds silly to say that it's about a medal, but, like, that's just... That would be so such a cool thing to have on your resume. But other than that, it's not going to grab my attention too much. Other than it really screws up the PGA Tour schedule this year, especially for Canada, as you mentioned earlier.
You know that the last time it was at the Olympics that a Canadian won the gold medal.
So that's why they took it out of the Olympics, and that's why they're repaying you this way.
They were so worried about world domination.
I think that must have been
it. They took it away. No, it's not going to... I'll pay attention to it, I guess, but I mean, it's not going to be at the front of anyone's mind, I don't think.
Well, yeah, and then shortly after, I think, like, a month and a half after the Olympics, if that even, we have the Ryder Cup, and that's the event I'm looking forward to the most in 2016, and you're going to have to talk me off my ego-filled ledge here, and that I think the U.S. is going to roll this year.
I wish I could talk you off of that ledge. I honestly... completely agree. I don't see how you look at the European team, and obviously, but they're top of the world with guys like, you know, Rory and Stenson and Sergio and all that. But Justin Rose is another one, obviously. But I really don't see how the U.S. loses this tournament unless, you know, all of a sudden they have some kind of catastrophic series of events that go wrong, and, you know, maybe someone like Tiger has to play. I don't see how they lose, to be honest.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think it's – I know you're probably not looking at a list in front of you, and I wouldn't expect you to name it off the top of your head, but, like, if we assume Spieth, DJ, ZJ, Ricky – Bubba are on the team, I think those are pretty much the safe six locks, safe-ish locks. Then we go Koepka and Holmes are right there in the points, at least when I've last looked at the standings. And then you got guys like Reed, Justin Thomas, Horschel, Kevin Na, Kevin Kisner, Tony Finau. You're not poking a hole. There's not a weakness in that team, whereas if you were to make a European team as of right now, it would include people like – I don't mean to disparage any of these players. I just don't think that – if you form a team with, you know, four or five of these guys, that it's really going to strike a lot of fear in the U.S. team. But Shane Lowry, Danny Willett, Bernt Weisberger, David Lingmerth, Andy Sullivan, and Søren Kjeldsen would be on the team basically as of now. A lot of things can change. I think Matthew Fitzpatrick's going to play his way into it. Again, a lot of things can change in the next 9 months. But I'm outside of the Rory, Rose, Stenson, Sergio, you know, quad. I'm not fearing a whole lot from the European side.
Yeah, you've seen a big drop off with the European side. So you look at guys like Poulter and Westwood, who have been staples of this team for, God, you know, 10 years, it seems, even more, and they've fallen right off the map. I believe Lee Westwood is still in the top 50 in the world ranking, I think, but Poulter isn't. They actually, the Eurasia Cup, which is in a couple of weeks, which Darren Clark is captaining for Europe, he had to pick Westwood and Poulter as his captain's pick, so they didn't even qualify for that team.
Jeez.
So I mean, like, you're looking at something, you know, where they have definitely taken a bit of a hit. I would love to see, you know, the U.S. team go super, super young on this and make sure that guys like Justin Thomas and Bert Skepka, you know, even someone like Kevin Novick, I'd love to see those guys go over there and play. You know, you're going to end up playing against guys like, you know, like you said, like Søren Kjeldsen, Shane Lowry, Andy Sullivan. You know, Victor Dubuisson obviously has a little bit of experience, but you're not running into what seems like the impenetrable wall that Europe used to be, at least in the last couple of Ryder Cups.
Right. That Iron Curtain has fallen. I've been getting into the Cold War lately, so that was fresh on my mind, but...
Are you ruling Jim Furyk out of this conversation? Because I didn't hear you mention him.
I didn't mention him by name. I'm not ruling him out at this point. We need fresh blood, and I'm not this. I know Furyk is one of the most consistent players of this entire generation. His Ryder Cup record pretty much speaks for itself at this point. Do I think he's a better player than Kevin Kisner? Probably at this point, but at some point, he's going to have to start a little bit of a downturn in his career, I think. And I think they really are going to embrace the theme of young blood. I think this actually is going to be the turning point, going with guys like Thomas and whatnot, rather than, I don't know. I'd have a hard time seeing Davis Love leaving Furyk off the team as a captain's pick, but maybe it's more of a wish list team than it is an actual realistic team, but I don't know.
He's ninth in the world. I mean, like there's nothing. I was looking at something the other day that since June of '96, he's been out of the top 50 in the world, like for like 11 weeks. Like, it's insane how good he is.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's just, I don't know. Like, I wouldn't be throwing him out. I mean, I know you'd love to see Billy Horschel get back up in there. It's the most exciting event of the year. It's what I'm definitely looking forward to the most. I just don't think it'll be as close as it was, the last couple of years. I really do think it's the U.S. who have the upper hand here. And I believe, actually, that they've changed I believe it's four captains picked.
Yeah, it is this year, so, at least for the U.S. side. I was going to ask, yeah.
So you figure that, you know, your top guys will obviously still qualify. But then if Davis Love really wanted to, you know, that's where someone like, say, Justin Thomas, who might not qualify based on points, you know, that's where he's probably going to have to get picked.
You watch your mouth.
I'm really looking forward to it.
The reason I was kind of excluding Furyk also is just, it is a line of thinking more than it is actually thinking he won't qualify or won't be picked, in that, like, if you go the Furyk angle, then you're probably, it's a slippery slope to also start thinking about like somebody like Kuchar, and then Webb creeps his way into the conversation. And like, that's the exact kind of mindset and thinking that I would hope Davis Love wants to avoid this year.
Tiger's 36th in the standings. It could happen. Steve Stricker's 37th. He actually said he's playing more this year now too. So, you know, the veteran presence is still something that can happen.
Is Stricker even in event? Can he? He's not in the Masters, I don't think, is he?
No, he said actually on Twitter last night that he's starting at the Sony and then he's going to the Humana. So he's playing two of the first three tournaments.
Wow, must be sick of his family already.
Yeah, I mean, if we're on the Steve Stricker conversation, but I'm really looking forward to it. It's the best event that they do every 2 years. So hopefully it's a little closer than we're making it out to be, but I'm sure that you guys would like to get back on the winning bandwagon.
Yeah, and if I'm making jokes about Steve Stricker's family, who's by all accounts is probably the nicest guy on the PGA Tour, then I think it's definitely time to end this podcast, because I don't feel bad about any jokes, and I feel bad about that one I just made. So,
absolutely.
So, Mr. Sarson, thank you so much for your time. We will be looking forward to reading your stuff on Twitter at @Adam_Sarson and at, of course, AdamSarson.com. And we will be speaking with you often during the year, I can imagine. So thanks a lot for your time and for coming on, and best of luck in 2016.
No problem. Same to you, man.
Later, man. Take care.
Be the right club. Be the right club today.
Yes!
Johnny, that's better than most.
How about him?
That is better than most. Better than most!
Expect